Welcome to the Deep Dive. So our mission today is to explore this whole stack of sources. We've got the API First Company article, the Orga's metadata paper, and gosh, over 20 research papers on Zenodo. And we're going through all this to understand how AI is basically fundamentally rewriting the DNA of business operations. And I want to start with this. Every organization has a comfort zone. Not the people, the system. It's the set of situations where the current way of working still produces acceptable results without anyone explaining how things are done. AI doesn't just push people out of their comfort zones. It pushes entire organizational structures out of theirs.
Oh, absolutely. That invisible system you're talking about, it's about to be dragged completely out into the light. And for a lot of companies, that's going to be a really uncomfortable exposure.
Yeah, which brings us to the exact roadmap for the deep dive today. Right. Why most of what we call organization is actually coordination overhead. What happens when AI absorbs that overhead directly? And why the companies that specified their processes before AI arrived are the ones compounding now, while the rest are discovering that faster tools just compound the ambiguity.
It's going to be a fascinating breakdown, I think.
Definitely. And, you know, for those of you watching our video feed right now, you can actually already see this theme playing out visually. If you look behind us, we've got this backdrop. At first, it looks like a traditional, super rigid corporate org chart, right? With all the little boxes.
Right, the classic reporting line.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if you watch closely, and it's doing it right now, it is slowly beginning to dissolve. It's melting into this fluid, glowing network of data nodes.
Which I just love. It really serves as a perfect visual anchor for this whole transition we are about to explore. You know, moving from those rigid hierarchical boxes to these highly fluid, self-coordinating protocols.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because if an organization isn't the people who work there, and I mean, it obviously isn't the product that gets shipped either, what actually is it? Like when we point at a massive skyscraper and say, wow, that is a huge organization, what are we really pointing at?
Well, the source material actually offers this brilliant lens for exactly this question. They call it the temporal stability hierarchy.
The temporal stability hierarchy. Okay, that sounds intense.
It's actually pretty intuitive once you break it down. So if you analyze any business through time, you find three distinct layers, and each layer moves or changes at a completely different speed.
Okay.
So at the very top, you have the value goal.
Right.
Let's say the goal is providing a great cup of coffee. That goal persists for centuries. I mean, a good cup of coffee meant essentially the same thing to a customer 300 years ago as it does to you today.
Right, right. The ultimate purpose is incredibly durable. You know, people want the caffeine, they want the taste, they want the whole experience of sitting in a cafe.
Exactly. Then you drop one layer down and you have the processes. This is the actual mechanics of how we roast the beans and brew that coffee. And those processes, they're less stable than the goal itself. They might last for, say, a few decades.
Like going from boiling water over a campfire to using one of those crazy espresso machines.
Yeah. We evolved from hand roasting over an open fire to using highly calibrated, like AI-controlled drum roasters. The method changed entirely, but that overarching goal of the coffee, it stayed exactly the same.
Makes sense.
And then finally, at the bottom layer, you have the least stable layer of all, which is the organizational form itself.
Ah, okay. Which would be the business structure. So like a medieval merchant guild hundreds of years ago, then maybe an industrial packaging factory, and now it's a modern global franchise chain.
You nailed it. And that form, it changes every few years depending on, you know, market conditions, labor laws, the latest technology.
So the organization, the thing we usually treat as this totally solid foundational institution, is actually the most fragile, volatile part of the entire system.
That's the crazy part. It really is.
Let me try an analogy here just to ground this for you listening. If a business is a software application, the organization isn't the core code itself. It's more like the Docker file or the database schema. Like, it doesn't actually do the work. It just configures how the work is resourced and routed.
That's a really good way to put it.
Or, you know, to step away from the software world entirely, it's like the sheet music in an orchestra. The sheet music doesn't make a sound. It just dictates exactly how the musicians coordinate to make the song happen.
Yes. And actually, the Orga's metadata paper relies heavily on that exact computational metaphor you just used. They argue that an organization is simply metadata for its processes.
Metadata.
Right. It operates purely as a configuration layer. So it specifies who has the authority to do what, when they should do it, and, you know, what resources they are allowed to consume. But the organization itself, it doesn't contain the actual process of making the coffee.
Oh, okay.
So you can completely rewrite the metadata. You can rearrange the entire org chart. You can fire all the regional managers, swap out the entire executive suite. And as long as the underlying process is intact, the customer still receives the exact same cup of coffee.
We see that play out constantly during corporate acquisitions, don't we? Like, the entire reporting structure gets completely flipped upside down, new vice presidents get installed, but the barista on the ground is still pulling the espresso shot the exact same way they did yesterday.
Precisely. The value stream didn't change, just the configuration layer.
But wait, if the organization is just metadata, just the routing logic for the work, why is there so much of it? I mean, why are modern org charts so incredibly dense and top-heavy?
Well, that gets to the absolute heart of the matter. And the answer revolves around a concept borrowed from lean manufacturing. It's called MUDA.
MUDA.
Yeah.
M-U-D-A, right?
Right. And MUDA translates directly to waste. So think about all that white space on the corporate org chart, the layers upon layers of middle management, the sprawling scheduling departments, the endless synchronization meetings on your calendar.
The meetings.
Right. All of that architecture exists for one solitary reason: to keep distinct processes from colliding with one another. It is pure coordination overhead.
Because I guess if the purchasing department doesn't know what the marketing department is planning, the big product launch fails. So we end up hiring a manager whose entire job is just to act as a human router. You know, just passing messages between the two departments.
Exactly. But look at that manager from the perspective of the end customer. That manager adds zero direct value to the actual coffee. The customer cannot taste the synergy of the marketing alignment meeting.
That's hilarious and totally true.
So if an activity doesn't directly contribute to the customer's experience, it is, strictly speaking, waste. I mean, it might be necessary waste in a complex system run by human beings, but it remains waste nonetheless. In fact, to borrow a defining line from the research here, organization is the MUDA you haven't measured yet.
Organization is the MUDA you haven't measured yet. Man, that is a sobering thought for anyone sitting in a middle management role today.
It really is.
Because it basically implies that all these layers of hierarchy aren't there because they represent the, like, optimal way to create value.
Yeah.
They're just the expensive cost of doing business when human beings have to manually coordinate highly complex tasks.
Yeah, they're the patch for human limitation, basically.
So how does a business actually go about removing this MUDA? I mean, the coordination still has to happen, right?
Yeah.
You can't just have total chaos.
Well, the historical trajectory of manufacturing is essentially the story of progressively compressing this exact coordination overhead. So think back to the era of craft manufacturing. Coordination back then required constant direct supervision. You had a master craftsman literally watching over a single apprentice.
So a one-to-one ratio of worker to manager.
Exactly. But then we moved into industrial manufacturing, which introduced the foreman. Suddenly that ratio shifted to maybe one manager for every 20 workers. You needed these dedicated layers of management just to orchestrate the movement of physical labor across a giant factory floor.
Right, like the classic image of a guy walking around the factory floor with a clipboard. He's manually telling people where to move a pallet of parts because, oh no, the assembly line is running low.
Yes, the clipboard guy. Which brings us to the breakthrough of the Toyota production system and lean manufacturing. They introduced something called the Kanban card.
Okay, I've heard of Kanban in software development, but this is the physical version, right?
Right, the original physical card. And the Kanban card is brilliant because it operates as a duality. It is a single piece of paper, but it does two completely different jobs at once.
Right, how so?
Operationally, it physically travels down the assembly line attached to a bin of parts. But organizationally, it acts as a signal. When that bin is empty, the card goes back to the previous station, signaling them to produce more.
Oh, wow. So by combining those two jobs into one simple piece of cardboard, you completely eliminate the need for the guy with the clipboard.
Entirely. The whole centralized scheduling department literally ceases to exist. The logic of when to produce and where to send materials was compiled directly into the physical flow of the work itself. So the coordination overhead didn't just disappear, you know. It was absorbed by the process.
I want to paint a picture for you listening to really visualize this mechanism. Imagine an org chart, the kind your company probably has, right? With rigid boxes and reporting lines everywhere. Now overlay two different flow lines on top of it.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
First, draw a horizontal line. That is your value stream. It's the actual work flowing from raw material straight toward the customer. Second, draw a vertical line. That is your coordination layer, flowing up to management for approval and back down with instructions.
Right.
So the horizontal value screen moves, but the vertical coordination layer does not. It just sits there, existing solely to keep the value stream from breaking. As technology absorbs that coordination function, that vertical structure begins to compress. It flattens. The value stream continues unimpeded. And what remains at the end of that compression is simply the specification, the rules that define what the value stream must achieve.
That compression, that flattening you just described, is the defining characteristic of the digital era we are entering right now. Just as that physical Kanban card replaced the human schedulers on the factory floor, API-first digital architectures are currently replacing the middle management layers in knowledge work.
Okay, so moving from the factory to the office.
Exactly. When two sub-processes within a company can talk directly to each other through an API and an application programming interface, you no longer need a human manager to route the spreadsheet from one team to another. The digital protocol handles the coordination automatically.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the Zenodo papers point out a huge roadblock for most companies trying to actually implement this. They call it the process nobody wrote down.
Oh, yes. The dreaded unwritten process.
Think about your own office right now. If your most senior project manager wins the lottery tomorrow and quits, how much of your department's actual workflow walks out the door with them? I mean, so many companies run purely on tribal knowledge. It's just muscle memory at this point.
It's the tacit knowledge problem, and it is pervasive everywhere. Most organizations operate under the total illusion that they actually know how their business works. They usually have this narrative document a standard operating procedure sitting in a wiki somewhere that hasn't been updated in like 3 years.
Right, the dusty binder that no one reads.
Yeah, but the actual day-to-day work is accomplished through unwritten exceptions, hallway conversations, and manual workarounds. And this presents a hard limit, because AI agents cannot read muscle memory. They cannot parse the tribal knowledge hiding in a veteran employee's head.
Yeah, you can't exactly API a hallway conversation. So how does a company actually bridge that gap? How do you take the tacit and make it explicit enough for an AI to actually coordinate?
This is the driving force behind the whole concept of the API-first company. Organizations are shifting to an API-first approach, not just for their software, but for their human operations. So instead of writing a narrative SOP in a dusty binder, the process is authored as a machine-readable YAML configuration file. It becomes a formal process specification.
Okay, let's pause there for a second because we're dropping some technical terms and I want to make sure we're all together. For those of us who aren't software engineers, what exactly is a YAML file? Like, we aren't talking about writing complex Python code, right?
Oh, no, not at all. YAML is basically just a very clean, highly structured text document. It looks a lot like a nested checklist.
Okay, a checklist.
Yeah, it's designed to be easily readable by a human, but strictly formatted enough that a computer can instantly query it. So in this context, a YAML process specification defines the exact inputs required to start a task, the expected outputs, the quality constraints, and the escalation paths if, you know, something goes wrong.
Okay, I have to push back on this a little bit. We're talking about mapping human workflows into highly structured, machine-readable checklists. You can't automate or specify everything, can you?
Well,
like, let's say part of the workflow is a highly creative brainstorming session or a really warm, empathetic customer welcome call. Those require a human touch, intuition, and emotional intelligence. If we force all of that into a YAML file, are we just turning knowledge workers into robots?
It is a totally valid concern, and honestly, it is the most common misunderstanding of this entire transition. The API-first principle applies to the process contract, not the execution.
So you're saying the API dictates a destination, but the human still gets to choose the vehicle they drive to get there.
That is a brilliant way to frame it. Yes. Let's look at your welcome call example. You absolutely want a warm, deeply human, empathetic welcome call. The execution of that call should remain entirely human.
Right. You don't want a robot voice reading a script.
Exactly. But that human interaction can still be governed by a testable specification, a contract. That contract defines exactly when the call must happen, what baseline information must be gathered as inputs, and the required outcomes. The framework in the research actually refers to these as L0 to L2 quality contracts.
Oh, interesting. Can you break down what an L0 to L2 contract actually looks like for, say, that barista or that customer service rep we were talking about?
Certainly. So an L0 contract is the absolute most basic level. Did the task happen? Did the welcome call occur within 24 hours of onboarding?
Simple yes or no.
Right. Then an L1 contract measures the data. Were the customer's account preferences successfully recorded during that call?
Okay. getting a bit more detailed.
And finally, an L2 contract measures the quality or the state. Did the customer report a positive sentiment score after the interaction?
Got it.
So the specification explicitly states what must be achieved and how it will be measured. But the human operator retains full autonomy over how to achieve it with empathy, humor, and creativity.
So it's not a rigid script the human is forced to read verbatim. It's a boundary condition. It's the system essentially saying, here is the goal, here is the required outcome. Now go use your human judgment to make it happen.
Exactly. And separating that underlying contract from the human execution unlocks something incredibly powerful, which they call the process registry.
The process registry, which sounds a lot like open source software, but applied to human resources and management.
That's exactly what it is. In the software engineering world, there is a practice called infrastructure as code. Developers rarely write server configurations from scratch anymore, right? They pull established secure templates from repositories like GitHub.
Sure, you just grab what works.
Well, business operations are moving in that exact same direction. Imagine a new startup. They don't need to waste weeks inventing an HR onboarding process or a procurement approval loop from scratch. They can simply access a public registry and fork a hiring process V4 template.
Whoa, that completely flips the traditional business building model on its head. You aren't building a back office department, you are downloading one.
Yes, you download the coordination logic, tweak a few parameters, perhaps adjusting the cultural interview questions in the YAML file to fit your specific company vibe, and you deploy it. The operational knowledge becomes a public utility, while your specific human execution of that process remains your competitive advantage.
So where does this trajectory ultimately take us? We've gone from physical Kanban cards to digital APIs to human processes codified in YAML files. If we follow this all the way to its logical conclusion, what is the end game here? Because it sounds like we are compressing the coordination overhead towards zero.
We are. And the Orgus metadata paper refers to this exact endpoint as the limiting case. As the cost of coordination approaches zero, the organizational chart converges to zero thickness. The processes become entirely self-coordinating through the AI agents reading those YAML files.
Zero thickness. Mm-hmm. You are talking about a fully functioning enterprise with essentially no traditional management hierarchy at all.
In the theoretical limit, yes. When that vertical coordination layer dissolves entirely, the primary human input that remains is the specification itself, the goals, the L0, L2 contracts, the definition of what must be achieved and for whom. The role of the human being fundamentally shifts from being a manual coordinator of tasks to being the author of the specification.
Because the AI agent is handling all the mundane routing. Like, the AI checks the inventory API, pins the YAML file for the rules, and automatically sends a notification to the barista's tablet when it's time to order more cups. No middle manager required.
Right, which requires a radical reframing of how we view the future of work. AI does not replace workers. It dissolves a coordination overhead that made organizations necessary.
Wow. Let me repeat that for everyone listening, because it just cuts right through the usual panic narrative we hear. AI does not replace workers. It dissolves the coordination overhead that made organizations necessary. It's not that an AI robot is going to physically pull the espresso shot better than a human barista. It's that the AI will autonomously handle the supply chain routing, the shift scheduling, the quality assurance tracking, all of that. Meaning, you no longer need three expensive layers of regional management sitting above that barista.
Exactly. The value stream, the actual creation of the coffee, remains untouched. It's the bureaucratic overhead that dissolves.
So what does this all mean? Like, what does this mean for a company trying to survive this shift today? Because if I'm listening to this and I realize my entire department runs on unwritten rules and hallway chats, this sounds like an impending disaster.
Oh, it should be a massive wake-up call. The dividing line between the companies that thrive and the companies that collapse over the next 5 years will be determined entirely by what they call the specification gap.
The specification gap.
Right. If you bring an advanced AI agent into an organization where all the operational knowledge is tacit unwritten, the AI has absolutely nothing to coordinate. It cannot read the unwritten rules of your office culture.
If you threw a lightning-fast AI at a completely broken, unwritten process, what happens?
It's worse than just failing. You scale the chaos. You are essentially handing a broken compass to a bullet train.
Oh, man.
The ambiguity compounds at the speed of light. And that leads us to the final critical insight from the research. The companies that specified their processes before AI arrived are compounding. The rest are discovering that faster tools just compound the ambiguity.
The companies that specify their processes before AI arrived are compounding. They took the time to write the YAML files to clearly define their L0, L2 quality contracts. So when they plug an AI coordination agent in tomorrow, that agent immediately understands the exact API of the business. It knows how the company works from day one.
Exactly. They can scale infinitely without adding a single layer of management overhead, while their competitors choke on their own unwritten complexity.
Man, that is powerful. Let's recap the journey we've taken today, because we have covered a lot of ground. We started with the realization that organizations are really just metadata. They're the configuration files, the sheet music for how work gets done.
Right.
We saw that internal coordination is essentially overhead muda, or waste that historically required humans, but is progressively absorbed by technology, involving from physical Kanban cards to digital APIs. And finally, we arrived at the reality that the ultimate survival skill in the AI era isn't learning how to write a clever chatbot prompt. It's the ability to explicitly specify your value stream.
That is the core of it. The human advantage moving forward lies entirely in defining the goal, not in routing the paperwork.
Yeah. And if you want to pull on these threads a bit more, we actually have two highly relevant deep dives in our archive. Episode 7 covers the franchise as a coordination design, which is directly related to this question of how much process can be specified without specifying everything. And if the DevOps framing resonates with you, treating business specification as infrastructure. Episode EOST 2 covers exactly that.
And as we wrap up, I just want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. If the organizational chart is destined to compress and management roles exist purely as coordination overhead, take a hard look at your own calendar tomorrow. How much of your current daily work is actually creating value for the end customer, and how much of your day is spent just acting as a human router for a broken specification?
Oof, a tough question, but yeah, absolutely the right one to be asking right now. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the structures around you. Look for the unwritten rules in your own comfort zone, and we'll see you next time.